This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, darlings. This is Miriam Margolyes asking you and ordering you to tune in to Joy 94.9, Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station. It's gorgeous.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. With me in the studio is our usual team of Gordon.
Good afternoon.
Gordon. Phil.
That's me.
That's you.
Hello on this very warm, sunny day.
Oh, it is, and we are enjoying it. What is the temperature at the moment? 27 degrees, heading for a top of 31. Beautiful Melbourne. And welcome to our guest today, David Roper. Hello, David.
Good afternoon, guys.
Thanks very much for spending a little bit of time with us today. We'll get around to your life story a little bit later. It's very interesting, listener. Stick around.
Well, we'll only go to the bits that are broadcastable.
Of course. Okay. But we're on World AIDS Day Eve, of course, and this year the theme is...
Getting to zero. Yes, we want zero emissions, zero stigma and zero everything. Just get it out of the way.
And we're going to remember during our program today that a few people have died of HIV/AIDS complications, and they've had a pretty rough road in their lives because most of them contracted AIDS or HIV back in the early days before medications were particularly effective.
Yeah, before they had the complete retrovirals, which didn't come until 1996.
But usually on this time, we have a few little birthday messages. And one of our favourite birthdayers on this day, Bette Midler, born 1945.
On the 2nd of December, yes.
Well, on the 2th of December, was she?
Yes, she's 2nd of December, wasn't she?
Well, no, the 1th, because...
The 1th, yes. She's on the 1st.
So there you go.
It was Nellie Furtado, who was 2.
Yes, there you go. Bette Midler, a great friend of the gay community. Not a role model.
But she got her start in the gay bathhouses in New York, didn't she?
Of course, she did.
That's where she got where she became quite famous.
I think a lot of things got started in New York. Bathhouses.
More than likely, they tried to close them down in 1983.
They did, and that was their response to the epidemic.
Grid, as they called it in those days.
Gay-related...
Immune deficiency.
That's right. David, in England, what was the response of the community there, please, at the advent of the AIDS crisis?
Well, at first there was great puzzlement because it was believed to be an American-only disease that was sort of could only be imported by people like air stewards. I mean, it was extremely nerve-wracking, for one thing. The other thing was that there was, at some point, a huge government campaign with tombstones as the sort of symbol. And so it was panic, really. I mean, there were times in the UK when you would go to a restaurant, people were taking their own knives and forks because they were so scared. Of cross-infection that could never have happened, of course. But, you know, I think I knew about 3 people in the first 100 who died, and it's very hard nowadays to convey that to younger people who think of this illness as nothing worse than having diabetes, just something you carry on living with, which is a great thing as well. But, you know, at the time when we watched it emerge, it was extremely scary.
Yeah, well, we had a fairly favourable response from our government. They got onto it straight away and realised that, okay, we had to do something without creating panic, except that they went and had the bowling ball coming down the bowling alley and bowling over all the people. It's on the way.
We were fortunate we had a Labor government in power, and Dr. Blewett was well aware of the medical significance of what was going on, and he got in with all the people that were in the area rather than than going to government departments. He went straight to the people that were being affected by the disease and worked out what they needed to be done. So that was, we were very fortunate in that way. And we still have some of the best stuff in the world here in Victoria alone.
We are lucky to have the Victorian AIDS Council and people living with AIDS who are keeping the focus on the situation.
And Living Positive Victoria is another great group as well. Yep.
Indeed.
Anyhow.
And let's see, a couple of other birthdays. Margaret Cho.
She's got a funny way of saying things too.
Yes,
does
yes.
Margaret Cho.
Well, fortunately, because she's a comedian.
Yes, yes. But
it's the way very she, sad to just stand there and
the way she, mumble. The way she says them, though, can be quite confronting sometimes too. Yeah, but and she's a very funny lady.
Someone else is Billy Lyle, who was part of the Bay City Rollers.
Oh, the Tartan Brigade.
Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he died of an AIDS-related illness. And he was one of those casualties that David was referring to. People left, right and centre, apparently indiscriminately. And last week on our show, we had a long-term survivor.
Max Niggle.
Indeed, 30 years or more. Surviving, living happily and healthily.
Well, so, you also said to me earlier that you'd been to see Jerry's Girls, and of course Jerry Herman is a great survivor.
We went to see that Friday night. Mm. Yes, he's been going very, very well for a long, long time with his with the diagnosis that he had. Yeah.
Stay tuned, because there's a lot more, but let's celebrate the happy sunny day today with Sunshine After the Rain.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Joy.org.au for the world.
You're with Chris Gordon, Phil and David here on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that is the name of the program. And we'd like to remember, of course, James Baldwin, an American author, writer, activist, born on the... born on the 30th of November 1987. No, it must have been... when he died, sorry. And he wrote some very interesting stories on the theme of being gay.
Giovanni's Room was the big one about travelling to, I think it was, he was in Italy or France or somewhere.
Italy.
And the whole thing was set about meeting Giovanni, and it was a beautiful, beautifully written book. And of course, James Baldwin did write other books as well, but nothing ever sort of came up to Giovanni's Room.
No.
One of the first books, one of the first gay books I ever read when I was about 18, I think.
Yeah.
And the other one was The Charioteer by Mary Reno.
Once again, that was a classical novel.
Became classic, yeah.
Earlier on in the modern world, let's call it the modern world, there were people writing plays about the social situations. And one of the more interesting writers was Oscar Wilde.
Yes, it's the anniversary of his death today. He died on the 30th of November in 1914, after going to Paris from being jailed.
Well, why was he jailed? Because he took a court case upon himself when the Marquis of Queensberry slandered him, so he thought. But in the process, his own private life was revealed and exposed, and he was pilloried. And he was sent to the Reading jail, where upon, well... I'm not sure whether it was inside or as a result of, he wrote the poem, The Ballad of Reading Jail.
He actually wrote that in Paris after he'd come out, about his experiences in Reading.
What do we... David, you are close to the action. What do we know about Oscar Wilde?
I'm not quite that old, Chris.
No.
I'm not saying you are, David.
But did we actually announce to the people that it's your birthday today too?
Thank you very much. It is.
Yes, yeah. It is. Oh, we've got you on your own. That other crowd there who are hogging the day.
Well, Oscar Wilde, of course, has become the great hero for all generations now. I mean, he is the gay icon, not just in literature, but in sort of liberation terms, because he did go to, you know, prison in defence of his belief that this was the love that dare not speak its name, but there was nothing to be ashamed of. It was a very brave, but also, many would say, a foolhardy move. And just a few days ago, as I was leaving London, The Times had an article about the portrait of Dorian Gray, the picture of Dorian Gray, in which the grandson of Oscar Wilde has revealed that the earliest versions of the book had far more explicit love references between the two men, talking about adoration instead of just admiration, and that Oscar Wilde was told by his publisher then to tone it down, water it down, otherwise he would be in trouble. So it wasn't unexpected that he would go to prison for what he did with Bosie and many other rent boys, and for speaking out. So, you know, it would not have come as a surprise to him.
And we know Oscar Wilde from maybe that work, and also the importance of being earnest, another social commentary piece.
Which is probably the only play still to be consistently revived from that period. Everything else was more or less, you know, you could dismiss as drawing room rubbish. Oddly enough, there's a production of that play in London at the moment, starring David Suchet, who, of course, is Poirot, as Lady Bracknell.
Yes.
And you, at first you think something a bit Dame Edna-ish here, but actually you forget quite quickly that it's a man, and it's a terrific production, the best I've ever seen.
David, we had a production out here last year by the Melbourne Theatre Company with Geoffrey Rush playing Lady Bracknell, yes, which was rather cute and clever. Yeah, it was very clever.
Well, I, of course, remember the film version with Dame Edith Evans, a very Queen Mary-type person.
But she did that on the stage as well.
Oh, yes.
But David Suchet's take on it is quite interesting, because he said the actual point it hinges on is not that the child was in a handbag, but that the handbag was actually in the public convenience area of Victoria Station, notorious at the time as a meeting point for men. Okay. Even when I was a student, it was one of the notorious meeting points.
That's right. They're all around London, aren't they?
Yes. They were. Yes.
Oh,
they were.
Ah.
Yeah. Well,
even, why do they have the trains?
Well, talk about passing trade. Traffic. Yes, indeed.
We've just had a message that I think we should ring out.
Certainly.
Hi, guys. I'm a long-term survivor of 30 years. I now live with many complications, including debilitating pain. How does your guest think we can support long-term survivors going forward? Happy World AIDS Day and cheers. Yes, well, we've tried to support long-term survivors all the way through, aren't we? Yeah.
It's not. The current medications are not immunity from all these other debilitating diseases. The body will fail eventually, but if we get our 3 score year and 10 out of our body, we're doing well. And that's what I think they're working towards. We will all die of some disease eventually.
Eventually.
Or that the body will just wear out. And I think it's the quality of life until you reach that point. And we're sorry to hear that he's got debilitating pain, and let's hope he doesn't get...
A lot of people like that, I can assure you, because I know quite a few of them. Yeah, but anyhow, back to Oscar Wilde.
One of the other sort of compatriots a little bit later in the century, in the last century, we can say that now, 15 years into the current century, was Terence Rattigan, another playwright who happened also to be gay, and he had a wealth of works. I'm not particularly familiar with them.
Well, you may know the films Flarepath and Separate Tables.
I always consider, if anybody asks me what my favourite movie was, it's always Separate Tables. No, I thought it was just a fabulous movie,
incredibly sad, incredibly moving.
Yes.
The tragedy of somebody who, you know, becomes isolated.
Yeah, that's right. David Niven was absolutely brilliant in the part. He got an Oscar for that, didn't he?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's odd, though, that we are categorizing all these people as, you know, gay writers, because they weren't at the time. They weren't out. They weren't gay. They were just, you know,
writers
who later we discover that, you know, they shared certain...
Isn't that an interesting part of gay or of history, of that these things come out? People after their death can allow some of these secrets to escape the closet.
But maybe we're just now discovering that writing turns you gay.
But I thought
it's all
that was
in the interpretation.
I thought that was a privilege of the upper classes. No.
Well, I mean...
That doesn't explain me.
Well, I keep coming back to Proust on this. A Proust who said that, you know, there are two clubs that you cannot elect to join. You just happen to be a member. One of them is being gay, you know, the other one is being Jewish. So he said he was afflicted with both.
Thank you, Marcel. You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that. Gordon, Phil, Chris and David. Time for a little song from Sia, Chandelier.
Party girls, don't get hurt, can't feel anything. When will I learn? I push it down, push it down.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
Yes, this program does have a podcast, and Julia, who's currently at the front desk, is our podcaster. She does a wonderful job for us, and so most every program on Joy has its own podcast stream now.
Yep, they still do, and you can hear podcasts all over the place. Just go to joy.org.au if you've missed something.
You. Or if you have a smart TV, you can look up our podcast there.
Oh, can you?
Yep.
I don't have a smart TV.
Well, I've got a very smart one, but it's not on the internet. So.
I have trouble working mine. That's how smart I am.
Oh, but your TV is quite smart.
Yes, that's right. Won't let me do it. Anyhow, one of the people that's having a birthday, he actually passed away on the 2nd of December 1990, was Aaron Copland.
Now, interesting man, Aaron Copland, American composer, born in 1900, and he basically created an American style of almost classical type music. Mm-hmm. And he was referred to as the Dean of American Composers, and works that were sort of very
semi-classical, sometimes classical.
Appalachian Spring, well, they were, Billy the Kid.
They were all ballets that he wrote.
And of course his fanfare for The Common Man is probably music that people know, but they probably don't connect it with him.
They played that at the opening of the Los Angeles Olympics, the last Olympics that were in Los Angeles, I think, when they had all those pianos at one stage, and the fanfare for The Common Man was the opening fanfare on that particular stage.
I was in Los Angeles in 1984 during the Olympics.
Were you?
Stuck in a plane because they wouldn't let us go through customs because we were going to San Francisco. Oh. And we would clog up their airport.
Oh, okay then.
So we sat there in the smog looking at the blimp. Wonderful day.
Your memories of the Olympic Games in Los Angeles.
That's right. And I didn't win any medals.
But Aaron Copland was in fact wearing one of the coats that Marcel Proust was mentioning. He was a Jew. He was from Lithuania, where he was a Kaplan. But to defend himself in some ways, he changed the name to Copland. But then we found out later in his life that he was documented as being gay.
So he had the double whammy, gay and Jewish.
Indeed,
which
indeed.
David was talking about before. Mm. Yes,
yes. And just on a sideline about changing names, a friend of mine who's a doctor, gay, his family, Jewish, immigrated to America, landed at Ellis Island, and they were asked, well, what is your name? And, of course, coming from Lithuania or wherever it was, from the pogroms, they couldn't really think of a name, so his grandmother said Lincoln, and the arriving officer said, you cannot call yourself Lincoln, that's the name of the President of the United States, which is why she knew that name. So she said, fine, okay, so she changed the name to Lincoln, spelled L-I-N-K-E-N. So that's the only family in the world whose name is spelled that way, because she was forced to think very quickly in order to get into the States in the 1900s.
Yeah.
But a lot of the immigrants were actually assigned names when they came through.
Yes. Mm.
But that happened here in Australia too, when in the early immigration, the people that were signing them in asked them to spell their names, and they didn't know how to spell. Most of them were illiterate. And I know one friend of mine, she had an A instead of an E put in her name, her family name, when they came out here. It was usually Ryder, and now she's a Ryder. Just those things, what happened. But Aaron Copland, of course, he was one of the 151 artists on the blacklist of the McCarthy era.
Oh, yes.
He was considered persona non grata too, because of what he did and what he was doing. Yeah, there was a lot of fun times in America, haven't there been?
He was one of the few composers of his stature to live openly and travel with his intimates, as this little piece of paper is telling me.
His underwear.
Well, most of these intimates were talented, and there's a list of names here, but I don't recognise any of them. However, one of them was a fellow by the name of Victor Kraft, who would prove to be one of the most constant romantic relationships in Copland's life.
Something to do with cheese?
No, no.
I resisted that, just for the record.
But the interesting thing is that although they would get together on occasions, and Kraft would leave and re-enter Copeland's life, often bringing much stress with the relationship at that stage, Kraft actually fathered a child in his straight life, we'll call it, to whom Copeland later provided financial security through a bequest from his estate. So it's interesting how the degree of benevolence and the loss of family connections and progeny moves people to do these sorts of things.
Then again, there was another great composer too, British this time, of course.
Yeah,
who wrote quite a few operas and things. He was born on the 22nd of November in 1913 and died on the 4th of December in 1976.
And we're talking about Benjamin Britten, and B-R-I-T-T-E-N.
Yes. But you just said he was from America.
No.
So was it American or Britain?
No. That was the other fellow.
Oh.
Copeland.
See, I'm listening.
Stay with us, again. It gets better.
What show is this?
It does get better, yes. Benjamin Britten, he wrote quite a few operas, and mainly for his lover, Peter Piers, of course. They were together for many, many years.
They were, as I was saying in regarding the other relationships there, they were a public declaration. They were walking up and down the streets together. They were known as a couple. They were like...
Elton and David.
Oh, right. All right, then. Fair
of that day.
Well, yes, like that. Modern-day Elton and David, yes. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, and they were inseparable, and they were complementary in their skills. Peter Pierce was the baritone?
No, tenor. Tenor.
He's a tenor. Yeah.
And Benjamin Britten would use him on occasions for his grand operas, as they were, of the last century. Someone who didn't lead such a wonderful life and died at a very young age of 22, I think it was, Matthew Shepard. American student, University of Wyoming, who was beaten, tortured, and left to die near Laramie, Wyoming.
Hanging on a barbed wire fence.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst photos I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. I will burst into tears if I think about it much longer.
To me, the other one was the young girl in Vietnam running down the street with no clothes on. During the Vietnam War, that was the other photo that always impressed me.
Well, let's hope that homophobia is gradually being eradicated from the world, because there's a lot of us. Get used to it, honey.
It's not reeling, but they finished up, the Supreme Court passed a ruling about homosexuality. You couldn't use that as a crime for murdering somebody.
Or as a defence.
Yeah, it wasn't as a defence. You couldn't use it as a defence for killing somebody. And they call it the Matthew Shepard Law.
But he died a horrible death, but not in vain, as it turns out. So
yeah.
I mean, gay bashing, poofter bashing, we know it all. We've probably been on the end of it.
Been there, done that.
And it was the earliest form of discrimination, apart from your religious discrimination that was going around.
And anybody who knows anything about internal homophobia would suspect that a lot of the bashers were themselves gay.
Well, this is usually the fact. You know, it's usually the point that they don't want to be known as being gay, so they go around and bash people that are obviously gay.
Well, hopefully now in this century they can think a bit before they hit.
Let's hear from Kylie right here, right now, on Joy 94.9. Stay tuned. There's more.
Great shows. Great topics. Great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're with it. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Chris, Gordon, Phil and David. You've got a croaky voice there, David.
I know. I sound a bit like Danny LaRue, don't I?
Much more attractive than Danny LaRue.
I could say it's something I caught in Melbourne, but I don't think I did.
No, it must have been on the plane.
On the plane.
Yes. Mm.
Now, we've got to talk about two things that actually happened in London.
Well,
because of our esteemed guest from London. One of them is one that you were initially engaged in, wasn't it?
The first...
We're not going to talk about the one in 52. That was the later one.
The very first Gay Pride March March? It was a really very uplifting moment. I remember very clearly we ended up in Trafalgar Square, and I was with my partner at the time, and we were carrying a placard which said, "I want to hold his hand," which obviously a take on the Beatles song. And
We were leaning on the barricades listening to the speeches. And years went by, about 10 years or more, and I suddenly got in the post a little book from a friend who'd become a teacher. And this book was called Sex, and she used it for sex education for her classes at the time. And I turned to the chapter on homosexuality, and I almost passed out. There was a picture of me with him on that march there in the book for everybody to see.
With
so even if I hadn't come out, that would have been, you know, I would have been outed by that.
But just imagine how many young people you've helped by having that photo.
I sincerely hope so, and I'm very proud of it now. Yeah,
yeah, you would indeed be. Yeah.
Was it a big march in numbers?
It wasn't huge, and of course, you know, it was quite something, because at that time, this is the very early 70s, there were several gay organisations, but they weren't always in harmony. We had CHE, the Campaign for Homosexual Equality, Icebreakers for younger people to come out, and we had Gay Lib, which was much more feisty and go-getting. But I can remember being a student in London then and getting quite anxious sometimes to try and get a copy of Gay News, which had just been released, the gay newspaper, because you could only get it in a straight sex shop and Summers, you know. So you had to sneak in there and get it put in a brown paper bag and then sneak out again with a copy of what was supposed to be the liberating, you know, gay publication of the time. So, you know, and going out, there were no gay venues. You'd go to a sort of drag pub. But I do remember going to, and now my business in London is in Wardour Street in the middle of Soho. A few doors up from there was one of the many sort of slightly illicit gay clubs where you knock on the door, somebody opens a little hatch and lets you in, and as soon as you walked in, you were given plastic knife and fork wrapped in a napkin, because the only way these places could have a license was if they served food. So there was usually a sort of dead meat pie on the counter somewhere, you know, you were told as soon as you walked in, if there's a raid, you know, pretend to be eating that pie, otherwise we'll lose our license. And my first ever visit as a sort of 18-year-old to this place was astonishing, because as the theatres closed at 11 p.m, in walked into that venue Kenneth Williams, Danny LaRue, whom I've just mentioned, and Stanley Baxter. And I was flabbergasted. I was a young boy from the sticks. And I thought, why are they here? That they're not homosexual, are they? Like me? I mean, it was just absolutely breathtaking.
What a wonderful way to realise that you were not the only gay in the village.
Yeah, by far not. Yeah, yeah.
But also it just shows how laws have changed, how public acceptance has wiped a lot of those things out. But we suffered much the same thing as that here in Victoria.
I've heard that when Joy started, you have to listen to it with your radio in a brown paper bag.
No. But one of the things that we did put in our application when we went up for a license for Joy was the fact that the regular press wasn't supporting us, wasn't giving our story out, that the newspapers never carried anything unless it was riotous and scandalous and against public morals or anything. No good stories at all. And we said in our application that we needed to be the voice of gay Melbourne. And we were recognised on that basis. And that's why here we are 22 years later, still representing our community so well for our community here.
And we can point out that tomorrow is our birthday.
Well, our anniversary.
Well, if we're going to get picky on words.
Yes.
Yeah, but we also had... How long has our Pride March has been going here in Victoria? They've been going for about 15 or 20 years
now, haven't
they?
I would say that.
Yeah, yeah. So I know I can remember the first one, and it was just absolutely wonderful. It was a great feeling.
So liberating, yeah. Mm. And I drove Douglas... I mean, I drove David down Fitzroy Street yesterday afternoon just to see how things were and to get a feel for the street, and there was people on both sides, and it's a 1 mile stretch of roadway, and it was so liberating because those who were scared to join in were on the sidelines, and then they would see someone in the crowd, oh, you, and they would scream their proverbials off, and people would join in the march with the collective strength of the crowd.
Nina, our favourite listener has just sent a message in. Good afternoon, Chris, Gordon, Phil, and special guest David. Day's conversations are very interesting, and I was extremely interested in what you had to say about Oscar Wilde. One of his quotes is, "Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken." And it's quite clever too, and is still just as relevant today. Even to this day, when I have outed myself as being gay, I have been ostracised and as a consequence have been discriminated against just for being me. It's a disgrace. Kind regards to you all. Nina, kisses and hugs. Thanks, Nina. Kisses and hugs back there. Yes, but we, as you get a bit older, you can sort of... discrimination doesn't... It still hurts, but you know how to handle it.
I mean, I think also it's not as if you sort of come to a point in your life story when things change radically, but there comes a point where you feel far more confident and comfortable. I remember that although I'd been an out gay man and was working for gay publications, when I became a TV presenter and I was in a long-term relationship, and the TV station said, "Well, do you want us not to mention the fact that you're gay?" And I said, "No, it's quite all right. Enough people know that I am. What I will say is this, I will never embarrass you." And that was it. You know, from then on, the matter was never, it was never an issue.
No, mutual respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you find a lot of that happened in Britain, of course, with the actors and singers and dancers and all the rest of it. People knew that they were gay, and they just accepted it and let them get on with their lives. Nobody worried terribly much about it, but when you were sort of in America, they were a different case altogether. You know, it was just dreadful.
They do have a slight case of hysteria.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could get away with wearing a T-shirt saying, "I'm not gay, but my boyfriend is." So they'll take it on a humorous level.
Yes, yeah. But you found that in Britain, with all the famous people that were really gay people, they were just accepted because they were doing their job and nobody worried terribly much about it.
We sort of think so, but I can quite clearly remember when Ian McKellen was in the closet. I mean, he came out and went back. Mm. Simon Callow was in the closet, Rupert Everett. You know, it's not a given that because you're in the public eye or because you're of a different generation, you feel better about it or that makes it any easier. I know plenty of young people who struggle now. I have a friend who's a student studying fashion from Armenian origins, and you know, his twin brother is straight, but if he came out, he feels, you know, his mother would disown him. And this is, you know, we're in the year 2015. What's going on?
Yeah, but we still have that here too, David. We still have young
I just feel,
you know,
did we not fight hard enough? I want to go back on the barricades.
The new generations, as much as anything, the young folk coming up who've been taught by their older parents and taught to be bad, and they're then facing their own devils in the closet. You know, am I the only person?
Yeah, and we've had gay liberation, but ignorance has got quite a head start on us.
But as I said to you, Chris, yesterday, there may be a good side to this. In UK at the moment, a lot of gay bars, you know, exclusively gay bars, are closing down because the younger people do not want to go to a ghetto bar. Mm-hmm. They just want to go to a bar. So, you know, the overtly gay crowd bars are slowly turning into something else.
That's happened here. We've had the gay bars here and the gay nightclubs and everything, and they've closed down, basically. There are still a couple that keep going, you know, but there are a lot of them are not... they're just mixed. You just go to a pub now.
Well, it's almost time for us to go, but I really want to thank David for being with us today in the studio, and it was a great pleasure to show you around some parts of Melbourne yesterday, and I'm sorry that your jet lag caught up with you last night, but you also went out and saw Briefs.
Yes, I did. I'd missed it in Edinburgh and in London, so I saw it in its homeland, and it was quite staggering.
That's good. The department in Myers?
No. It was in the Athenaeum.
Oh. And now, of course, this afternoon I should make my pilgrimage to Smith Street, I think.
All right, then. Yes. Well, I'm sure they'd love to see you out there as well. Thanks very much for being with us today. Catch you next week. You're on Joy 94.9. All the best for now. Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.